Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Decoding the Unknown, the show where me, Simon, and my writer, Katie, decode the unknown. You can see what we did with the name there. Except today, this one's about Amelia Earhart. And, like, the thing about that is we've never solved it, have we? I remember there was a few years ago, there was something about a bone that someone found, and they thought this is Amelia Earhart, and then it turned out not to be or something like that. But I don't think we ever solved this one. So we're just going to try and decode it. What we're going to say is it's not like the Bermuda Triangle or anything like that. Well, I'm assuming. If you're new here, what happens is, as I said, Katie's the writer for this channel. I'm going to read what she has written. And that's really how this show works. Oh, and also, our wonderful producer, Jen, is going to make the video spicy. And by spicy, I mean she's going to add some music and images. Thanks, Jen. Let's go. One of the most enduring missing persons mysteries of modern times is that of Amelia Earhart, a world-famous pilot, or aviatrix, to give her sexier title. I feel like there's this big movement, and I mean, great, like, I'm all for equality of women, or equality between men and women, or however the correct way of phrasing that is. But it's like, yo, sometimes women just have cooler titles. Like, I heard that, like, actresses wanted to be called actors, and I'm like, wait. Or, like, someone wanted this. And I'm like, but isn't actress cooler? Like, aviatrix is cooler than aviator. Actress is cooler than actor. I mean, at least in my mind, anyway. It's because I'm so progressive. Just the words sound cooler. She and her navigator Fred Noonan vanished while Earhart was attempting to be the first woman to circumnavigate the globe. This had previously been done by American Wiley Post in 1931 and 1933, but Earhart's route would be closer to the equator and therefore quite a bit longer. Apparently just because she wanted an additional challenge. It's like, what do you want to do, Amelia? I'm going to fly around the world, but just to make it extra challenging, we're going to do it near the equator. Why, Amelia? If you look at her actual flight map, though, close to the equator seems to be stretching it a bit, given that the starting point was above the Tropic of Cancer. That's not near the equator, then. Those tropics are really far above it. But if it was completed, it would have been a seriously impressive piece of flying. On July the 2nd, 1937, deep into the last portion of the journey and on the longest leg, Earhart and Noonan, flying in a custom-built Lockheed Electra, failed to arrive on Howland Island in the Pacific Ocean. Many theories have sprung up as to what happened to her and Fred, but as yet, nearly 85 years later, neither the plane nor trace of the two aviators has ever been found. There were a number of issues leading up to this particular leg of the journey, which culminated in the plane never reaching its destination. One of the most telling issues was that Earhart had been having radio problems, which were not properly fixed during previous stops. While she was able to transmit, she could not receive incoming messages. This was compounded by the fact that the ships and landing party at Howland Island did not usually transmit on the frequency that she was expecting them to. This snafu was in part due to her husband, George Putnam, being the person to organize the landing details at Howland Island. Was he an expert in radio communications? I think he was a publishing magnate, wasn't he? I've made a video about Amelia Earhart before for my biographics channel where we talk about her whole life, not just her disappearance. And I think she was married to a publishing dude. That we're about to find out. No, he was a publisher. Well done, Simon. Just read the scripts, fact boy. Why this task was left to him is also up for debate, but presumably both he and Amelia reckoned that the US Coast Guard, who were stationed there in the Itasca, would know what they were doing. Unfortunately, the transmissions from the Itasca did not reach Earhart. Also, some radio equipment had been left at the previous stop to make way for more fuel, although apparently not enough fuel was available to completely fill the plane. Another possible factor in the situation was navigator Fred Noonan. He was a top-class navigator, but in prior calls with her husband, Earhart had mentioned having personal problems on more than one occasion. Given that it was only her and Noonan in the plane, it's pretty likely she was referring to him. He was a known drinker, so if it had a little too much the night before, which caused him to navigate even a little off course, they were in serious trouble. I feel like if you're choosing someone, like, what are we going to do? We're going to fly around the world. It's like, who are we going to choose as a navigator? How about that drunk Fred Noonan? He'll be great. He can't stay away from the bottle, which is everything you want in someone navigating a plane. Said no one ever. Of course, he might have been perfectly fine and made a mistake anyway, or Earhart may have decided to overrule his navigation, as she had done in the past, and set them on the wrong track. The skies were cloudy that day, making it difficult for celestial navigation, and experts have since claimed that Earhart's map may have put Howland Island up to 6 miles away from its actual position. What? When was this going on? It was like 1930s? Yeah, 1930s. I feel like maps that were accurate were a thing in the 1930s, right? 6 miles seems like a fairly major mistake. Either way, Howland Island is tiny, like the proverbial needle in a haystack of the Pacific Ocean, which is also extra hard to find when your map to the needle in the haystack says it's somewhere else. In case you didn't realize how big the Pacific is, it's bigger than all the landmass on Earth combined. It covers almost a third of the planet, and it's handily also the deepest ocean as well. The crazy thing about the Pacific, go on to like Google Earth, and you can rotate the Earth or just get any, you know, you don't have to go to Google Earth. I sound like such a turbo millennial. Get a globe and twist that thing around, and you can angle it so it just looks like the Earth is a water world. I mean, just about. Like, there's the landmass, like New Zealand or whatever the pokey one is over there. Is it New Zealand? I don't know. Or like one of those islands in Asia. They're just touching the edge, but it does look like a water world. Is it Kevin Costner who's in Waterworld? This is not relevant. Let's move on. So, yes, trying to find a minuscule island that's a mile and a half long, if you're even a smidge off course, is going to be pretty tricky. The plane was running low on fuel by this point, and her last transmission to the Itasca stated, "We are in a line position of 157337. We'll report on 6210 kilocycles. Wait, listen on 6210 kilocycles. We are running north and south." They seemed to think that they were in the right place, but no trace of them was ever seen again. After extensive searching for almost 3 weeks, the US government concluded that the Lockheed Electra had crashed in the Pacific and Earhart and Noonan had drowned. Earhart was legally declared dead 18 months later, in January of 1939, when she would have been 41. In May of that year, George Putnam married his third wife. Make of that what you will. That is moving pretty fast, eh, George? Also, check out the picture of George P. Putnam with Amelia Earhart on his Wikipedia page. It's so weird. It is? Okay, we're checking it out right now. Oh, it is weird. Jen, put this up on screen and I'll describe it for our podcast listeners. He's extremely tall and it seems that she's sitting down. He's got his hands in his pocket and he's just like looking down on her from a great height. I mean, it's a very weird portrait and he's also like frowning. Okay, mate. I mean, it's not the picture that I'd choose, but all right. It's bizarre. Because the official government statement of crashing into the sea was the most obvious and therefore the least interesting, many diverse theories have sprung up as to what could have happened to Earhart and her plane. Unfortunately, nobody seems interested in poor old Fred Noonan, but that's the price you pay for being a celebrity's sidekick.
Holy crucial moment.
Alright, so let's get into some of these theories. The first is that Earhart and Noonan landed somewhere near the then Japanese-controlled Marshall Islands and were taken prisoner by the Japanese. This was 1937 and American-Japanese tensions were starting to run high, so capturing the famous Amelia Earhart would have been a valuable get for the Japanese. But then, yeah, absolutely. But then the Japanese would have been like, yo, look who we've got. We've got Amelia Earhart. Ha ha. But they didn't. They were just completely silent, which makes me think that they didn't have Amelia Earhart. Boom! Theory discharged. No, well, maybe there's more to it. Let's see. Depending on who you ask, and there are eyewitnesses to both stories, the aviators were either shot and killed almost immediately or held captive on Saipan until they died. There's a branching theory that suggests that Amelia was taken off to be the voice of Tokyo Rose. Yes, but if that was the case, they wouldn't be like, it's Mystery Tokyo Rose. They'd be like, it's Amelia Earhart. Not Tokyo Rose mystery person. I mean, and also people would be like, well, that's the voice of Amelia Earhart because she was very famous. Or a husband would be like, that's not that, that's my wife. Right? These theories are sometimes so silly. Fred doesn't feature any further in this side theory, but I'm giving him another shout out because I kind of feel bad for him. Fred Noonan! Anyway, Tokyo Rose was the name given by the Allies, the female broadcaster in the South Pacific. Again, I feel like I made a video about this on one of my other channels, so I was familiar. She regularly broadcast Japanese propaganda to bolster their spirits and demoralize Allied troops. It wasn't just one English speaker that had this role, but multiple different women, and it was never definitively proven who any of their identities were. Allied troops at the time thought they were sure they recognized one of the voices, though it was Amelia Earhart now telling them how crap they were. Maybe there's something to that. What about her husband? While this seems like a bit of a reach, it must have been irritating to hear a familiar voice and not be able to place it. When somebody realized it sounded like Earhart, who, remember, was a major celebrity in the US in particular, you can see how the link was made to her being captured and forced to work as a propaganda broadcaster for the enemy. Yeah, maybe. Okay, very skeptical. And also, they'd be like, it's bloody Amelia Earhart. Because that, hearing Amelia Earhart tell you that you're shite, is a lot, because she's like some super famous American hero, is way more demoralizing than just some random woman telling you that you're shite. So convinced with the truth, troops, that this was Amelia Earhart, that her husband George went through hours of recording before publicly stating that it wasn't her voice. Although remember that he moved on pretty quick after her disappearance, so maybe it would have been inconvenient to suddenly have her pop back up again. No, it's definitely not Amelia. She's definitely dead, and I'm not, what's the opposite of monogamous? Where you get married twice? I don't remember, but he's definitely not that. Another theory that then branched off from this was one that, yes, Amelia Earhart was captured by the Japanese, but then was rescued and repatriated back to the US in secret. Why, you may ask? Yes, indeed. I mean, wouldn't this have been a really uplifting outcome to the whole debacle? Well, it was done secretly because she was a spy. Oh my. And for some reason, it would have hurt the US's intelligence operations if this was public knowledge. She hadn't been flying to tiny Howland Island on a whim. Oh no, it was to spy on the Japanese and see what they were up to. Unfortunately, the plan was scuppered when she was captured, so she had to go and live under an assumed identity when she was returned to the States. More likely, but still incredibly unlikely. There are other reasons why the Japanese theory took such strong root. The first is a film that came out in 1943 called Flight for Freedom. See if this sounds a bit familiar. In this movie, a famed aviatrix is asked to use her round-the-world flying attempt to spy on the Japanese. Spoiler alert, she mysteriously vanishes and her ultimate fate is never revealed. Amelia Earhart's estate better got bloody paid for that, because that is her story. This took the idea that Earhart was a spy and ran or flew with it, spreading the theory far and wide, at the same time acting as anti-Japanese propaganda. So people ended up thinking this must have been what happened, even though the roots of it were from a sensationalized version of unconfirmed events. Yes, a massive stretch. Even recently, the Japanese must be involved theory was still alive. A photo unearthed in 2017 purportedly showing Amelia and Fred on the Marshall Islands being towed by a barge. Upon further investigation, however, it turned out this photo was probably taken in 1935, 2 years before her disappearance, and it's not conclusive who the people in the picture are anyway. The lack of soldiers or any other hint of capture also makes me question why it got so much news coverage. But hey, it's not a famous mystery for nothing. The reason it got so much news coverage is because the title, Picture of Amelia Earhart After Death, maybe, or just a question mark thrown in there, or maybe not at all, depending on how clickbait you are, is something that gets clicks and drives advertising dollars. And yes, this is the world we live in. It's the equivalent of selling newspapers in the past. If you've lost count of the branches of this one, sorry, but here's another. When she did go back to the US, Amelia Earhart slipped back into her everyday life under the name of Irene Bolam. This is a pretty wild ride, but some people are convinced that they've cracked the case. It all stems from one man, Joseph Gervais, spotting a woman at a party in 1965 and becoming obsessed with the idea that she was the missing Earhart. While the two do look very alike, and Bolam did move in the same circles as Earhart, and had also been a pilot, that's as far as it went. The fact that her life did overlap so much should have been another indicator that it was not Earhart, as a secret identity would not give you such a similar backstory to the real one. Yeah, of course not. If you're like Amelia Earhart, and you're taken back to the US, and they're like, all right, we're going to give you a secret identity. Well, first off, you're a female pilot in the 1930s. It's going to be like, wait, how many female pilots are there? And you also look extremely like Amelia Earhart. It's going to, that is massively suspicious, and it would never happen. Or maybe it's so obvious that people immediately discount it. Also, while there are small facial differences, if Amelia Earhart had surgery to alter her appearance, surely she would have looked significantly different to her former self and not be so readily identifiable. Despite being an actual real person with a birth certificate, marriage certificate, and a child, poor Irene Bolam was subjected to obsessive levels of scrutiny by Gervais and author Joe Klass, who published a book about the theory in 1970 called Amelia Earhart Lives. There better be some lawsuit, because can you imagine looking like someone who disappeared and then someone writing a book saying that you're that person? The kind of that you're going to get is going to be so annoying that there better be some sort of injunction that stopped this book being published. Bolam sued and the book was pulled. Excellent. But that wasn't the end of this theory. Even after her death, Gervais wouldn't leave her alone and asked to take photographs and fingerprints from her body. Thankfully, this wasn't allowed. More books sprung up after classes, touting the same notion, but it's been unequivocally disproved, so hopefully the world will move on from thinking that the two people who look alike are the same. All right, So we got the crash and drown theory, the Japanese capture and kill theory, or the Japanese capture and imprison a potential spy theory, and Irene Bolam down. What else could have happened to the unlucky duo? A long-standing and very popular theory is that the Lockheed Electra landed near Gardner Island, now called Nikumaroro, and Amelia and possibly Fred eked out a castaway existence for a while before eventually dying. I feel like I've heard of that one. While Nikumaroro is 653 kilometers, that's 405 miles from Howland Island, it's a heck of a lot closer than the Marshall Islands, which is where all the Japanese action is supposed to have taken place. They're over 1,500 kilometers, that's 932 miles from the scheduled landing spot. This castaway theory, the Marshall Islands, that is. This castaway theory came about when conducting their initial search for the lost aviators. The US Navy flew over Gardner Island, as it was then called, and reported signs of recent habitation. Apparently unknown to them, the islands had been uninhabited since the late 19th century. Subsequent radio signals that people think may have been from the stranded Earhart also seemed to coalesce around the island. Gardner Island was checked by the Navy in the subsequent months following Earhart's disappearance, but nothing was found. In 1988, Richard Gillespie, founder of the International Group for Historic Aircraft Recovery, that's a mouthful, handily pronounced Tiger, which is a cool and better name, got on the case. After multiple trips to Nikumaroro throughout the years, however, no conclusive evidence of Earhart, Noonan, nor the plane has ever been recovered. While some artifacts have been found due to Tiger already working on the assumption that Earhart did live on the island, the evidence has been used and sometimes bent to point to that conclusion instead of being taken at face value. The island was re-inhabited from 1938, the period right around the disappearance, so anything dating from that time would likely be related to those inhabitants. Bones were found on the island in 1940, but after initial examination by a doctor, they were determined to be those of a short male around 5'5". For the record, Amelia Earhart was around 5'8", and our hero, Fred Noonan. Fred Noonan was a towering six-footer. The British officer who found them even said at the time that they looked older than 4 years. While it seems unlikely, the whole skeleton was not found, and techniques for working out gender have improved a lot since 1940. Many people think that the first doctor just got it wrong. Using photographs of the bones and computer analysis to try and work out their original owner, owning the bones. You own your bones. That's a weird concept. Anthropologist Richard Jance concluded in 2018 that they more than likely belong to a 5'8" tall white woman. Well, that could be her. As the bones were lost a long time ago, it's not possible to perform any sort of DNA testing, leaving yet another dangling loose end to the mystery. Even the big guns have failed to prove the Nikumaroro theory conclusively. In 2019, Robert Ballard, who found the Titanic no less, conducted a deep water exploration around the island, but nary a trace of the Lockheed Electra was found. Basically, short of finding the plane or something with Earhart's name on it, it's going to be impossible to prove that she was ever there. Mundane conclusion though it is, it does seem as if the plane was off course, out of fuel, and just ended up ditching in the Pacific, creating a legacy for Earhart that persists to this day. Yeah, with this one, I'm like, maybe some of these theories are a little more believable than others. I don't think the Japanese one has anything to it. Maybe the one of her landing on the island and subsisting for a while and then dying. Maybe, yes, unlikely. We found really nothing conclusive to that. The plane crashed in the ocean and they all drowned and the Pacific's massive, so they're never going to find it, right? If they lost that giant Malaysian Airlines plane and no one could find that, even with all the modern technology, it's not hard to imagine that it's just lost in the Pacific, is it? Anyway, this has been an episode of Decoding the Unknown. If you enjoyed this, well, this show's obviously relatively new, so please, if you're watching on YouTube, make sure you're subscribed. Hey, if you're listening as a podcast, this show is broadcast as both things. Well, make sure you're subscribed as well. Leave a review if you fancy it. And thank you for watching or listening.
Have you ever stumbled upon a story that's just too weird to be true?
But too intriguing to ignore?
I'm Laura Anderson.
And I'm Tom Reynolds. Together, we're the hosts of Wanna Hear Something Weird?
A new podcast where we venture into the heart of mind-bending mysteries.
From peculiar legends to ghostly encounters, we try to separate fact from fiction.
Join us on a journey into the bizarre. Listen to Wanna Hear Something Weird wherever you get your podcasts.